It was a thriller at Chase Center. Kevin Diana, the voice of the Santa Cruz Warriors and sometimes the Golden State Warriors, joins me to break it all down next. It's a post-game live edition of Locked On Warriors.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by no one, by Kevin Diana, who's the voice of the Santa Cruz Warriors. He also has a book out on the history of professional basketball in Idaho. I can't believe all this time we haven't talked about that book. We're going to talk about it tonight at the end of the show. But first things first, the Golden State Warriors win a thriller. And by the way, are we live? I'm not seeing numbers for our chat. So I hope everything's going okay there and people can see us. But Kevin Diana, you can follow him on Twitter at Kevo408. You can follow me, Cyrus Otzes, on Twitter at DogSurfRoadshow. The Golden State Warriors win a huge one in terms of playoff implications. The final score, 120 to 109. Kevin, great to see you, brother. Your first impression of a huge, thrilling victory for the Golden State Warriors. What's your reaction, sir?
The most frustrating first half of the regular season and the most exhilarating second half of the regular season. I mean, it was kind of like the Golden State Warriors to a T in this game. 14 first half turnovers. If I hadn't cut my hair on Friday, I would have been pulling it out. I threw my wallet across the room. And then the second half was sublime, absolutely sublime, like the mid-90s rock band, rest in peace to the lead singer. The name escapes me right now, but like unbelievable second half. And I do think that Draymond Green stirring the pot at the end of the second quarter had a little bit to do with it, to like get his guys going a little bit, get them a little juice. As former Santa Cruz Warriors assistant Ramon Sposada would say, who was in the Clippers radio room for a while, little juice, radio room, film room. They got a little juice going right before halftime. And you could see it really carry over into the second half. And usually, or there are sometimes when a team who's coming back from a big deficit like the Warriors were when they were down 63 to 43, they get it to one possession or something, they just can't crest the hill. Or they take a momentary lead, and then the other team comes right back with a blitz of their own. Once the Warriors grab the lead, they took off with it, and really New Orleans didn't. They threw a few punches here and there, but Golden State, I mean, just absolutely put that game in a stranglehold down the stretch. And I mean, they went from being down 20 to barely have. There wasn't like even a whole lot of clutch time in that game. Like that's how dominant they were down the stretch.
Exactly. And when you say clutch time, you mean what the score was within 5 points, right?
In the final five minutes, correct.
In the final 5 minutes. Which is, you're right, it's a little startling considering that the Warriors were down by 20 in the first half and they turned it around that much in the second half. The Draymond stuff, let's start there because I heard him doing a post-game interview on TNT. The game was broadcasting both on on the local affiliate, NBC Sports Bay Area, but also nationally, NBA on TNT. And the post-game interview, Draymond was asked about all the fracas going on, right? And primarily I thought it was initially between him and Brandon Ingram, because Ingram didn't look very happy with Draymond. But then it turns out in the post-game, he said it was CJ McCollum who was talking a lot of smack to him. And that's who he called out in the interview. And he basically said that the Pelicans are not a team built to trash talk. Whereas Draymond, you know, as anyone who follows the Warriors knows by now, is from Saginaw, Michigan. And he emphasizes his area of growing up as an example of why he loves to talk so much. That's the brand of basketball. They talk trash there. And that's what he loves to do. And I feel like the Pelicans made a huge mistake waking Draymond up doing that because the Warriors just lacked aggression in the first half. By the way, I don't know if our chat is not working. So if people can watch us while we're doing a live show and we're not addressing your chat questions, for some reason the stream is just not showing for us. So Our apologies for that in advance. Do you see it, by the way, Kevin? Is that?
I don't see this chat stream going. So
yeah. If you can't see us, then that probably means we're not even actually on the air live. Kevin, I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to close it and then restart it, or what do you think, man? We've gone 5 minutes.
I'm down for whatever, man.
My guess is this means, yeah, I'm going to go to the website right now, and check it out. Oh, no, we're live. We're live. We're good. Never mind. I just checked it out. And
we're just getting zero ratings.
All right. So we're good. We can see the chat now. That all got resolved. Okay. So Draymond, your thoughts. Did the Pelicans make a huge mistake egging them on like that? I mean, because teams do this all the time. They poke the bear, right? The Grizzlies are notorious for this. I never understand why you would ever give the Warriors any excuse to actually wake up and have an extra incentive or motive to win the game. Your thoughts on Draymond being getting into those scuffles? Is that how you say it?
Scuffles?
Where he got called for a technical. The double tech was kind of ridiculous, I thought, by the way. I don't know if he earned it. I don't know if they rescinded because that was his 17th technical of the season. Next one, he's ejected. He's going to be suspended, I'm sorry, again for another game. What was your reaction to just the jawing back and forth with CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram primarily being the players riling Draymond up? Your thoughts on that? All that first half trash talk.
I mean, Cyrus, I generally enjoy good trash talk and in a little pushy shovey. That usually doesn't bother me. What bothered me is like the 8 minute delay it caused. Looking after like the second one when Herb Jones like got tangled up with Draymond Green on the offensive foul, and then there's the exaggerated motion of trying to get up, but he's on my legs and I need to make a point or whatever. And then that just took forever to sort out. So like that was a little annoying, but I mean, if you're the Pelicans, what do you do there? Right? Like it's this guy's talking trash to you or whatever, or, you know, Draymond Green's an instigator. Like, what are you supposed to do as a competitor? Like, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I'm not going to let Draymond Green get under my skin. But invariably, like, a lot of guys have Draymond Green get under their skin. So he's really good at it. And I'm not sure I blame the Pelicans for lighting a fire into the Warriors. I think that's more just Draymond Green doing what he is really good at. And I said this on Twitter. I'll say it here. And I said it after the post-game show on the Mavericks. I think it was that one.
Okay.
Draymond Green plays his best basketball on the defensive end of the floor when he's in foul trouble or he's like right up against the limit. You know, after he picked up that technical foul, he picked up his fourth foul. The way he was defending Jonas Valanciunas or when he was on Brandon Ingram was exemplary. And, like, most players, like, will lose their aggressiveness on the defensive end when they get into foul trouble. It feels like Draymond ratchets it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting how he's able to do that. And more often than not foul out of a game.
Yeah, and Draymond again. I was literally worried that he was going to get kicked out, and this was such a pivotal game for numerous reasons. First and foremost, the standings. If the Warriors had lost this game, they would have fallen to eighth in the Western Conference, falling behind New Orleans in terms of tiebreaker. But because they won this game, they hold on to the sixth seed. They jump a half game ahead of the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're a half game behind the Clippers, and they're a full game behind the Suns. Tonight was clearly, though, the Stephen Curry show. I mean, especially in the fourth quarter, he lit it up. His box score tonight, 39 points on 14 of 25 shooting. He shot better than 50% from beyond the arc. He was 8 of 15 from deep. Even grabbed 8 rebounds and 8 assists. There was one particular play late in the game where he grabbed an offensive rebound and had a no-look pass to Jordan Poole, who shot 3 and made it. It was just – Steph was just masterful tonight. And kudos to him. I want to play a soundbite from him first. This was immediately after the game when he joined Bob Fitzgerald and Kalena Azubuike on the NBC Sports Bay Area broadcast, talking about just, you know, the thrill of victory and the whole the competitive aspect of tonight's game. Here's Steph.
We saw it on your face in the first half, and you put the team on your shoulders in the second half. I mean, we know what time of the season it is, and we faced a lot of adversity all year, and even in this first half, it was kind of like nothing going your way and some self-inflicted wounds. So the one thing that we have, and, you know, Draymond's fire in the first half is the ultimate, you know, testament and visual of what it is we have a competitive spirit that is unmatched, and it's been that way for a decade. So for us to tap into that, we understand that we have to, you know, we got to play better, more consistent. We're figuring out our rotations and stuff, but that belief and that killer instinct, three guys standing on this court, myself, Draymond, Clay, we've done it. We know it. And then, you know, our guys are starting to figure it out. So JP played amazing in the second half, made some big plays. JK played amazing. Loon, amazing offensive rebounds to get us extra possessions. Dante, you know, started the third quarter, got us back in it. So everybody contributed, but our competitive spirit got us the win.
Oh, and I love the names he mentioned. I couldn't agree more. Jordan Poole had a phenomenal second half. Jonathan Kuminga, I was really stoked that he started tonight. We'll talk about the lineups and so much more. I have Kevin Dana here joining me, the voice of the Santa Cruz Warriors, sometimes Golden State Warriors, sometimes LA Clippers. We're going to promote your book at the end of the show as well. First, got to give some love, though, to FanDuel, the official sports book of the Locked On Podcast Network. Let me find their overlay. There it is right there. And look, we're still in March Madness. Look, so this is how little I pay attention to college basketball nowadays. And I'm not ashamed of it. It's just, you know, there's only so many hours in the day. And the fact that most NBA players do not play a lot in college anymore leading up into the game like it used to be when I was a kid, it's just really drawn disinterest for me. But then I find out that my alma mater, San Diego State University, I'm an Aztec for life, mofos, and they're in the Final Four. Kevin,
you didn't know that they were in the Final Four?
Sorry. I didn't know until this morning, man. I totally missed out on that. How the hell did that happen? Who did they beat in the Elite Eight? I knew they made it to the Elite Eight.
They beat Creighton by one on Sunday. It was a hell of a game. Kind of a controversial finish, but I think it was the right call. So
what was controversial about it?
It was like they called a foul on the Creighton player with like 1.2 seconds left. And this guy, Darion Trammell, if I'm saying his name right, missed the first free throw. It was tied at 56, hit the second free throw. And then Creighton, ball got deflected out of bounds to end the game.
Oh, so San Diego State made one of two free throws to win the game?
Yeah, and they're saying the foul was like a little questionable, but it was definitely a foul. Yeah, the guy Nembhard on Creighton had his hand on the back of Trammell.
I guess I was expecting, you know, my classmates to reach out to me. I didn't hear from a single one. So, yeah, but regardless, March Madness is in the house. They're playing who? Florida International? Is that correct? Is that who they're
Florida
playing?
Atlantic. Florida International is in Miami. Florida Atlantic's in Boca Raton.
Dude, what the hell is going on in the Final Four? Whatever it is, San Diego State, my alma mater, is in there. And if you love betting on the action, the tournament's heating up, but there's no better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sports book. That's because right now FanDuel is giving new customers a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just go to fanduel.com/lockedon and sign up today to claim your no sweat first bet. Then you can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads to which team's going to be cutting down the net, Aztecs, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. I will watch the Final Four. I'm officially now interested. Don't miss your shot at a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to fanduel.com/lockedon to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. You can follow Kevin Dana, the voice of the Santa Cruz Warriors, sometimes the Golden State Warriors, sometimes the LA Clippers. You're the voice of Victor Wembanyama's France team. You've been calling those games. I've been seeing you on Twitter posting some of those highlights and recaps. On Twitter at Kevo408. You can follow me, Cyrus Otzels, on Twitter at DogSurfRoadshow. Stephen Curry had a huge game. So did Jordan Poole. What was your thoughts on Poole tonight? Real quick, a stat line. He came off the bench. This was one of his better performances coming off the bench. If you watch the game tonight, they showed the stat of the splits between how he plays as a starter versus on the road. We've dedicated entire shows to that. He's just not the same player when he comes off the bench. Tonight, though, 21 points. He was 8 for 15 from the field. That's over 50%. That's all you could ever ask for from an NBA player. He was 2 for 6 from beyond the arc. He met the Mendoza line, 33%. You can live with that. But I think more importantly, he was aggressive on defense, and the timeliness of his big shots were huge. He hit them when they mattered most. What was your impression of Jordan Poole, at least for tonight, silencing a lot of people out there critical of his play lately?
Yeah, I mean, I think step back 30-footer up to with 38 seconds to go against Minnesota aside, he's generally been really good the last three games. And I mean, yeah, like defense, there was one defensive play he made that was like out of this world. I just remember being like, wow, all right, that was a hell of a play. He hit 8 of 15. The most impressive thing about Poole's game today is that you always kind of hold your breath when Steph goes out of the game. And he went out of the game with a little more than 8 minutes to go. And I'm pulling up a play-by-play right now to see exactly what the score was. It was at 99-96, basically, when Kuminga hit two free throws. They bring Curry out. And then when they brought Curry back in, it was around, maybe 2.5 minutes later. I'm trying to find – sorry, this makes for a horrible podcast. I'm trying to find the exact – okay, they brought him back in like 2 minutes and 35 seconds later, and it went from being +3 to +7. And, like, in that stretch, Poole had a made free throw. He helped kind of steady the ship. He didn't do anything within that. He hit a three that bumped the lead up to 6. So he had 4 points himself in that, like, 2.5-minute stretch with Steph out of the game. And then, you know, he hit that big three off Steph's no-look pass to him to make it a 7-point game at the 4-minute mark of the fourth quarter. So he had a couple of like really big plays down the stretch. And what was his turnover number today? Just one turnover today.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bench high +16 in 29 minutes. So yeah, really good stuff from Jordan Poole today. And here's the thing. I said this once, I'll say it again. He is going to do things that are going to make your hair turn gray. But you have to live with it because
yeah, I agree.
That's who he is right now. At one point, he will not be that player. He will get those dumb plays out of his head, those young, immature plays. Like, Steph used to make those plays.
Yeah.
Like, it will come. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Steph Curry. I'm not saying that. But I am saying he will mature out of making some of these mistakes that he makes.
Agreed. I know Poole's been struggling a little bit, but I've been pushing back at the same time for people that have been insinuating his game has completely regressed this year. His scoring has gone up. His rebounding has gone up. Yes, his shooting percentages are down. The turnovers aren't great, but again, tonight he had one, and Klay Thompson the other night made it very clear how much they value him, his teammates, by reminding everyone else they're not winning a championship last year without him. He was the sixth man. By the way, real quick before we move on from Draymond Green, what were your thoughts on the interaction he had with general manager Bob Myers, who came down to talk to him and calm him down? We also saw footage right before we started recording, Kevin, of Gary Payton II's father, the Hall of Famer, the Glove, also having a chat with Draymond. What were your thoughts, though, on Bob Myers during the game trying to calm Draymond Green down? I mean, Draymond was fired up in that game. What was your reaction to that?
I would say that I'm not sure there are many GMs I don't know how many GMs have the ear of the locker room to the point where they could go and talk to a player on the bench during the heat of the battle. But Bob Myers is one of those GMs.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know the rest of – I don't know the other 29 teams, like, intricacies and how their inner workings that well to make that. But I'd be willing – like, you do not see that a whole lot. But there is obviously just a huge level of trust between those two. The lines of communication, to borrow kind of a corporate phrase, have been used so much that, like, that interaction is not like so – it might be not normal in an NBA context, but like it's not out of the realm of possibilities for Golden State. So yeah, and I think more or less Draymond knows, as he says, he doesn't get baited into technicals. Now, I'm not sure, like I think there are technicals he has been baited into getting, but I think more or less he knows how far he can push it, and the Warriors need him to be, as some on Twitter have said, a habitual line stepper. He's kind of got to be. You need a guy like that. You absolutely do. That's why, yeah, and you need someone who's got that fire in his belly to that Agreed. Point where he runs hot. And I think, all right, sometimes it bites Golden State, but much more often than not, it doesn't.
And Dennis B, by the way, thank you for posting. Hit that like, subscribe button. Rebel the Sounds, right, that Draymond was pissed that the coaching staff did not review his fifth foul. Yeah, a lot of people, I heard those sentiments as well, that the coaching staff didn't challenge. Yeah, go ahead.
If I may, Cyrus, I mean, sorry, you can finish your point, but I
want to jump in. And from now, and a lot of times, just to let you know, Kevin, I'm not always looking at the screen because I'm doing research. So just jump in, man. Interrupt me. I will never be offended by that, brother.
Sorry, are you doing your own research like some of our friends during the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the expert.
Sorry, I got my PhD on YouTube. Anyways, yeah. I'm glad they didn't challenge that because that was a charge. Now, people will say, well, Herb Jones's foot was in the restricted area. That applies to a secondary defender. You can't be the help defender to come in and take the charge. If your foot is in the restricted area, it's an automatic block. Herb Jones was like the primary defender on that play. And so, yeah, he might have had his heels on the restricted area, but like he was there. And I thought it was a charge when I saw
it. Yeah, and it worked out because the Warriors made a challenge just moments later on an out-of-bounds call that was called on Clay. They overturned that. The Warriors got the ball, and the rest is history. Bouncer writes that he's getting married. Congratulations. And yeah, I'll totally be your best man. Just email me, DM me on Twitter at DocSurfRoadShow, or email the program warriors24pod@gmail.com. As long as the wedding is in Northern California, I'll totally roll with you, dude.
Ty has $1,000 appearance fee you have to pay.
No appearance fee. The booze is all I need. Just the free booze and the free dinner. I'll roll, man. I love having a good time and meeting people. Who am I thinking of? Jonathan Kuminga. Thank you. I was about to brain fart there big time on my boy. I thought Kuminga had a huge game. We heard Stephen Curry give him his props. I was just happy that he started because by him starting, you knew he was going to at least get a few more additional minutes from that. And he got the minute total that I've been advocating for. This is the mantra of Locked On Warriors. Good things happen when Kuminga plays. What happened tonight when he played in his 31 minutes and 13 seconds? He was perfect from the field. 5 for 5, 1 for 1 from beyond the arc. Finished the game with 17 points, grabbed 4 rebounds in the process. His defense, I feel like, has been exemplary. Your thoughts on Kuminga, man? There's that one, I think it was an alley-oop from Curry.
Draymond,
I can't remember either, but I can't remember who threw it either. But that was just a momentum setter there. Kuminga was huge. I love the kid. I can't wait to see what his ceiling is because I don't think we're going to know that answer for years. Your thoughts on Kuminga just having a beautiful night?
He's on another level, man. He does things that very few people in the NBA can do. Like, his athleticism is off the freaking charts. And not only how he uses that athleticism to finish around the rim, I mean, like, some of his basket finishes just take – I'm not talking about dunks. I'm talking about, like, where he's kind of doing this. I know, like, the podcast people can't see what I'm doing, but, like, swimming with the ball up with his left hand, like, through traffic. It is just – it's like, wow. Like, where –
The podcast people need to go to YouTube later and watch what you were just doing there, because you made me laugh. Thank you, sir. Continue on. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I was like, for anyone who watched Power Rangers, I was like the putty guys. For anyone who's of my age. But like those gray goblins or whatever the hell. I think they were called the putty. Yeah.
All the bad guys, those random bad guys, they killed like thousands of them on the show.
Yeah, you just got to kick them in the Z. They disappear. Kuminga, he just, and then like you see him locking in on the defensive end. Now, Brandon Ingram hit some really tough shots tonight and he had a good game, but you know, he was 9 of 22. It wasn't like he was the most efficient he's been. Now, he hit all 7 of his free throws, you get 26 points on 22 shots. You like him to be a, you know, he didn't go off on them. And yeah, he clearly wasn't the only guy guarding Brandon Ingram. Picked up 2 fouls in the first 5.5 minutes of the game. I thought it was Draymond who threw it. I love watching Kuminga play. I love it. I love it. And man, just when that guy's like 24 years old. I mean, I think he'll be an all-star by the time he's 20.
Right?
I'm going to say that.
He's not going to be 21 until October, folks. I mean, it's not like he's about to be 20. Like, Moses Moody's turning 21 soon. I think he turns 21 in May.
May 31st, I think.
When is it?
It's like May 31st, I want to say, because I remember interviewing Moses. I was at the NBA Finals media day before game one, and he had his birthday the day before. I remember he was playing cornhole with his family and had barbecue. That's all I he and his mom won the game of cornhole, for those who were curious. And he was like playing like his dad and his uncle or something like that.
Well, Steve Wilton in the chat writes, how about some love for Dante DiVincenzo rising up for that slam? Huge. I believe it wasn't to start. Was it? Oh, was to start.
It was the second half. It was the very first bucket. Yeah,
it was. And he also, because he also hit a three, or he had a 3-point play after that. It was something going on there. I can't remember how.
He had 8 points in the third quarter.
He was DiVincenzo. Yeah, and we gave him his props a little bit at the very beginning of the show, but DiVincenzo was huge. No regrets starting him. You know, Kevin, I want to ask you this question because the Warriors again, they were down by 20 at one point in the first half. The energy wasn't there. And again, Steve Kerr has just been it's just confusing, baffling. I'm flummoxed by his rotations. And what I want to ask you today about is two things. One, our favorite player, Anthony Lamb, who I'm sure people love his name being brought up. It's the only time I'm going to bring it up. I know I'm beating a dead horse talking about him. But I do feel like 17 minutes is a little much. Kerr clearly loves Lamb. I would be perfectly happy if that number just got cut in half. If we saw Anthony Lamb for 8 minutes a game, I'd be thrilled. I don't think he hurts the team, but I just think there are much better options. Meanwhile, on the other side of the spectrum, Jermichael Green, who 2 games ago actually had a great night in a victory against Philadelphia, then Kerr doesn't play him at all in the Timberwolves game. I think he got minutes at garbage time at the end. Do you agree with my sentiments that Anthony Lamb, if his minutes were just cut in half, would be a much more reasonable and the Warriors think would kind of thrive off that more? And B, what do you think is going on with Jermichael Green? Like, is he persona non grata now? Did Gary Payne II officially, is he the casualty of GP2 coming back? Your thoughts on those two players?
So I do think right now Jermichael Green is the casualty of GP2 being reinserted. And we've seen this before where Jermichael has had a few DNPs this year. You know, even going back to the first half of the season where they're trying to find the right combinations, you know, like James Wiseman was playing more than him at one point. I personally want to see Jermichael Green get in there.
Same.
I'm thinking about this a little bit more because you asked me this off the air. But I think why he didn't play tonight, A, because of GP2. I don't know. So if you look at like actual rotation minutes tonight, like Moody had like a minute and a half.
Wait, what the hell? Just one second. What was that horrible sound? And why can I only see like your head and your body?
Oh, sorry. I moved my laptop. I'm looking at.
That was an awful sound, Kevin. That was an awful, horrible sound.
I apologize for anyone I may have offended.
I'm teasing.
But so, like, actual people who played significant rotation minutes tonight, there's like nine guys who played actual, like, significant rotation minutes, plus Moses Moody's, like, minute and a half in the first half. He ended up with 3 minutes. Like, I know the temptation is, like, why not just give Jamichael Green 9 of Lamb's minutes? I do think, like, coaches generally want to keep their rotation to 9 or 10 guys. And, like, if you split those minutes, it's almost like you have to make a decision between this guy or that guy, because, like, if you split a guy's minutes in half, then, like, he doesn't get into the rhythm that he needs to be productive over the course of his time. And so it's almost like at that point you have to make a decision, and Lamb got those minutes tonight. I personally want to see Jamichael Green get some of those minutes, but I understand why they play Lamb. I personally am a Jamichael Green fan, but Anthony Lamb has carried them through some times where, like, he absolutely needed to play 20 minutes a night through, like, big stretches of the season. And so I understand why Steve Kerr feels like Steve Kerr wants to go with him, because he does have a comfort level with Anthony Lamb.
Clearly. Yeah, clearly. It's just, but he's coached Anthony Lamb as much as he has Jermichael Green, which is why, again, this whole thing is baffling. But you're right. It just comes down to who Kerr is most comfortable with. What are you going to do? But
just a counterpoint. Yeah, they've been on the roster the same amount of time, but there were vast stretches where Jermichael Green was unavailable.
That's true. And, like, yeah, he was hurt.
That didn't help. Like, there was like a whole month of the season he couldn't play because of a staff infection or COVID or something like that.
Yeah, that's fair. Absolutely. Well, let's go over the standings right now real fast. And again, the Warriors, that game did not look good for a long time. The Warriors were down 36-25 after the first quarter. Then they got outscored.
But after Cyrus, a horrendous foul to send Brandon Ingram to the line on a 60-foot heave. Like, just at this point, you're like, what the hell is going on?
You're right. And by the way, I'm also laughing at Dennis B, who I've never seen this before. The Silence of the Lamb. It's just, I don't know why I'm laughing at that. Anyways. Okay. So I just thought the standings, 5 games remaining. 5. Okay. It's not like there's a lot of time left here. We're literally in the home stretch of the season. And right now, because of that win, the Warriors are the 6th seed. They're a half game behind the Clippers. They're a full game behind the Suns. And they're really 2 games behind the Suns, because the Suns on the outright tiebreaker. Whereas that has not yet been determined with the Clippers. I don't know. Is that because did they split the season series? Do you know that,
with
Kevin?
The Clippers?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they split the season series with the Clippers. The next tiebreaker is division record.
Now
they're behind in that. And
not
then the tie, but they can tie with the Clippers in division record, because you have 16 games in the division. The Warriors are 6-9, the Clippers are 7-7. So if the Clippers lose their final 2 division games and the Warriors win their last one, they could have that tiebreaker. And then the next tiebreaker after that is conference record. And right now the Warriors have a 2.5 game better conference record than the Clippers.
That is very interesting. Yeah. So there you go. That's Kevin just explained it. And then,
and to your point about, you're right about them being like basically 2 games back of Phoenix, but they need Phoenix to like lose 3 games, because they're 2 games back in the loss column and they don't have the tiebreaker. So they can't win out and have the Suns go through. Like, 4th is going to be really tough to get at this point. I don't know what Phoenix, and I'm going to look up Phoenix's schedule.
Well, real quick here, Richard Sarpong, I'm glad you asked this. I want to address it. Cause Steph in that attribution we played in post game did make a comment about the rotations. And I think what Steph was referring to maybe is the fact that Steve Kerr, I think for the last 6 games now, has been toying with his minutes again, where instead of Steph's traditional rotation, which is 12 minutes, 1st and 3rd quarter, and then 6 minutes, 2nd and 4th, or a variation of that. Last year, for example, Kerr started messing with the rotation for the entire season. There was never any consistency there. And then finally, at the last month of the season, I think Steph kind of stepped in and was like, all right, we're done with this experiment. But they tweaked a little bit, where I think Steph in the 3rd quarter was playing 10 minutes, and then he would play 8 minutes in the 4th. The goal ultimately is to keep his overall minutes at 36. That is what Steph is most comfortable with. But for the last six games or so, you're seeing Kerr messing with it again. I haven't really heard a rationale for why. I imagine he's just trying to find the best possible combination of lineups out there. But you alluded to this. In the fourth quarter, Steph started the quarter. Then he came out. I don't remember what the minute mark was. If you have the play-by-play in front of you, somewhere in like the 6 to 8 minute range.
He came out at 8:04, came back in at 5:29.
There you go. And this time they survived that. Which has not always been the case. What are your thoughts on Kerr doing that? Like, do you have a better understanding of the why of that than I do? Because I don't know exactly what the reason is. But I don't believe in messing with things that aren't broken. Steph's rotation has been fine for his entire career. I remember last year, a lot of people were up in arms over his minutes being messed with. Your thoughts on that? Do you have any thoughts on that? Hey, take it away, please.
I mean, like, here's the thing. It's not the ideal rotation that some people think he should have, that he played tonight. He went for 39, 8, and 8. It obviously, like, doesn't bother him a whole lot. Yeah, I know there's been talk that his preferred rotation is the 12-6, 12-6. But if this allows him to play more in the fourth quarter and he's going to go for 39, 8, and 8, like, I don't have a problem.
I hear you. Right? Well, last year, I mean, because a lot of people were alluding to it because Steph's numbers last year – really tanked. I mean, it was one of his worst seasons as in terms of shooting percentages. And like I said, the 12-6, 12-6, and like AC, for example, writes that the 12-6, 12-6 was awful whenever the team was losing the fourth quarter because you would have to wait for him to come back way too late. And I get that. I remember moments too when I was frustrated over having to wait for Steph to come in. But ultimately, it's a tried and true formula that works, you know. And if it works, I don't see the need for messing with it. But I don't know. That's just me. Regardless, the Warriors did win. And we talked about the standings. Last but not least is your book. You have an ebook. We haven't had a chance to talk about this yet. You have an ebook out, and it's literally the pinned tweet on your Twitter account. If you follow Kevin Dana on Twitter at Kevo408, you see right there at the top, Stampede Story, available on Apple iBooks. And the title of the book is A Eulogy for Professional Basketball in Idaho, Stampede Story. What is this book about, man? Enlighten the readers or enlighten the audience tonight on what's in this book and why they should pay $8 to, or $7.99, I apologize, to buy it and listen to it.
Hey, yeah, my award-winning book. Actually, it didn't win any awards. I sold like maybe 25 copies. I'm actually surprised I had the stick-to-itiveness to actually finish that damn thing, because I don't really even like writing that whole much. But basically, it's a story about the history of the Idaho Stampede, and I got the idea, and they're now the Salt Lake City Stars, who I think lost in the first round of the G League playoffs tonight to Sioux Falls. They're down 9 with like a minute to go. But they're the Jazz G League team. But basically, their last ever game was against the Santa Cruz Warriors. I knew that they were more or less gone that last season. Like, I had a feeling that the Utah Jazz, like, purchased their rights. They're going to move this team to Utah. And so when the schedule came out and Santa Cruz's last game, they were going to be playing Santa Cruz their last game in Boise, I was like, I got to be at this game. And, like, I knew I kind of knew who to talk to already, because I'd been to Idaho a million times when I had traveled with the Santa Cruz Warriors. And I basically watched the final game with this guy who had courtside tickets for the entirety of the Idaho Stampede. He would hunt with players. Like, they would go hunting together. He'd hunt with coaches. Like, he was, like, tied in with this franchise. And I just, like, watched the final game in the team's history through his eyes. And, like, then I just, like, kind of go through the history of the Stampede. It's like I talk a little bit about the last game, then I talk about the history.
Cool.
So yeah, no, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how well written it is. First book I ever written. I have a second one that's written that I just need to get like okayed from Golden State. It's about Santa Cruz's championship season in 2015.
Oh.
So Yeah, find yourself somebody that loves you like Kevin Durant loves the G League. Exactly, Douglas. My little league, man. I've been in it 11 years.
Well, I imagine it's incredibly appealing if, let's say, you're going on a road trip or you're just going to be you're forced to listen to something for a while. You don't have access to anything video. There is your entertainment, right? You hear the voice.
Entertainment might be a stretch, Cyrus, but
you're informed.
You know, I appreciate the plug. You know, I still got to set up my like tax thing with them, even though it's been 6.5 years. I'm lazy as hell just because like it didn't sell a lot. So I was like, just whatever. Like I finished it and then I like went directly. I finished it like 2 weeks before the G League season started. And then I had to like start doing G League stuff, like, you know, my broadcasting and stuff. So like I totally put it on the back burner. But nice. Thank you, Richard.
Better late than never, man. Yeah. And like I said, hopefully someday we'll see the published version of it in case you're a reader and don't like your books in audio style. But that's fascinating. I personally am a fan of the history of anything, really. I'm a history buff. I lived in San Diego for 4 years, more specifically Encinitas, and it was during that time where I went to San Diego State and got my my graduate degree. And my farewell to San Diego was a story. If you just Google history of professional basketball in San Diego, the story will come up. I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post. This was many years ago. I used to write freelance for them. And they were a very different publication. I mean, they're a very agenda-driven organization now, in my humble opinion. But back then, they were trying to be objective. And besides, I wrote just sports stories and travel stories. And the story I wrote was about the history of professional basketball in San Diego. And what inspired me was partly learning, I think Peter Hartlob of the San Francisco Chronicle wrote this piece about how the origins of the Golden State name came about in 1970, 1971, when the former owner of the Warriors changed the name to draw interest from the entire state. And also because for one season, I kid you not, the Golden State Warriors called San Diego home. They played, I think, 4 home games there in this 1 year. It was ultimately just a ploy to get the city of Oakland to build what became Oracle Arena. But for 1 year, the Warriors were playing in San Francisco, and they played 4 home games in San Diego. They abandoned that plan after one season because, again, they agreed to make the arena in Oakland, and the rest is history. But in the process, I learned that San Diego had a long, rich history of professional basketball. The Houston Rockets were originally the San Diego Rockets. The
Clippers, Golden State, right?
The Clippers were the final part of the story. They were like the last one because the Clippers were because before the Clippers, there was the San Diego Sales. There was the San Diego Conquistadors, which Wilt Chamberlain actually was the head coach of.
Was that the CBA team?
ABA. Yeah, correct. ABA.
ABA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. ABA. So I did ABA and NBA. Okay. Yeah, so while you're on that note, if you're
curious. Nice. No, that sounds awesome.
But check out Kevin Dana's book because he's actually making money. If you go check that out, it's called Stampede Story. And if you need the link, just go visit Kevin Dana's Twitter account. It's at Kevo408. And wrapping things up here on yet another long show. Apologies to the locked on to the folks, my bosses at Locked On. They always go, God damn it. It's supposed to be 30 minutes. And here we are now at the 43-minute mark. I apologize. Just too much good stuff to talk about. So the Warriors are off until Friday. Is that correct? And then they play the Spurs. Is that right? Spurs. At home?
Yeah, the potential landing spot for Victor Wembanyama. Catch Victor Wembanyama next in action Sunday at 10 a.m. against Monaco, the best team in the league.
The San Antonio Spurs are they own the third worst record in the NBA. Could that be one of those trap games for the Warriors, Kevin, as we wrap things up? Could that be a game where the Warriors can sleep, look ahead, and suddenly they're losing to the San Antonio Spurs at home? Your thoughts?
I mean, they went 0-2 against the Detroit Pistons this year. They can lose to anyone.
Jesus.
So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're going to beat the Spurs by 25. You gotta have your guard up. Like the Spurs have lost enough where they have the same odds at Wemby that the Rockets and Pistons are gonna have. Like none of those teams can catch the Charlotte Hornets, so like they might as well win. You know, like
I hope they win. Yeah, it's looking.
You know, I mean, like the Spurs might as well try to win down the stretch. Like they lose nothing by losing, and they gain nothing by losing more because
the top three worst teams. Is it the four worst teams all have the same odds, right? To get the number one
pick? Three worst teams have the same odds. The fourth worst team has like slightly worse odds.
Okay. There you
go. 12-something percent, I think.
So the Spurs have nothing to lose by winning.
Nothing to lose by winning.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And again, the Warriors victorious tonight, 120-109. We didn't really talk much about Klay Thompson, whose struggles continue. I mean, tonight was relatively okay for him. He was 5-for-11 from beyond the arc, 6-of-16 from the field as a whole, finished with 17 points. He's now scored less than 20 points in 5 of the last 6 games. So I am hoping, and I'm sure everyone's hoping, who loves the Warriors, for an improvement from him. Before we go, happy birthday to Hall of Famer Rick Barry. Yeah. He's going to be on the show tomorrow. So that will not be a live show. So just please hit the like button. Please subscribe to the show. And that way you'll be alerted when the next episode is published. Hall of Famer Rick Barry, I spoke to him today a little bit, and he has some thoughts about this Golden State Warriors team. So he'll be expressing those on tomorrow's show. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on as always. Anything you want to promote or anything we've got to touch on before we wrap it up?
No, I'm good. Happy 79th, right, for Rick Barry?
Yeah, it is crazy. Yeah, he doesn't act like 79.
He doesn't.
Yeah, it is wild. He's pushing 80, man.
Hell of a player, man. One of the most underrated players in the history of the game.
Agreed. And he's a hell of an individual. In my opinion, one of the most misunderstood human beings on the planet. He's actually he's a great dude. And I'm really lucky to call him a friend. And Kevin, you've come on our show a lot, the Rick Barry show. So you're familiar with Rick.
Yeah.
So he'll be on the show tomorrow. Great win for the Warriors. Kevin, anything else? Are you good?
I'm chilling.
Good night, everyone. Have a safe and calm rest of the evening. Go Warriors. Till next time.